In a logo, a disk of glowing blue light grows larger behind a golden sphinx. Words appear below it. Hollywood Pictures. A midnight blue sea reflects off a curved lens. A silhouetted man stands before the rippling sea and peers through a brass telescope. Spyglass Entertainment. Now, on a black background, white titles come into view, then fade away. Hollywood Pictures and Spyglass Entertainment present a Kennedy Marshall Barry Mendel production. Bruce Willis as Malcolm Crowe. The Sixth Sense. More titles. Toni Collette as Lynn Sear. Olivia Williams as Anna Crowe. Haley Joel Osment as Cole Sear. Donnie Wahlberg as Vincent Gray. With Glenn Fitzgerald, Misha Barton, Trevor Morgan, and Bruce Norris. Casting by Avi Kaufman. Costume design by Joanna Johnston. Music by James Newton Howard. Edited by Andrew Monshine. Production designer, Larry Fulton. Director of photography, Tak Fujimoto, ASC. Executive producer, Sam Mercer. Produced by Frank Marshall, Kathleen Kennedy, and Barry Mendel. Written and directed by M. Night Shyamalan. Now, a thin wire filament in a bare light bulb glows from faint orange to white hot. Beyond a wine rack lined with dusty bottles, a woman in a pair of high heels descends a staircase. The shapely young brunette steadies herself against the railing, then approaches the wine rack. Wearing a silk tank dress, she peers into the dimly lit shelves, touching one bottle and scanning others. A slight smile crosses her lips as she chooses a bottle and wipes dust from the label. Her brow furrows, and she looks over her shoulder. Turning, she hugs the wine bottle to her chest. Shivering, she glances around the cellar, then hurries upstairs. In a candlelit living room, children's handmade cards line a mantel. A man holds a glass of red wine and studies a frame.
It's getting cold.
The young woman tosses him a sweatshirt and puts on a white cardigan.
That is one fine frame. One fine frame, that is. How much...
He falls back onto a couch.
Does a fine frame like that cost, do you think?
She kneels beside him and smiles.
I never told you, but you sound a little like Dr. Seuss when you're drunk.
Anna, I'm serious. Serious, I am.
I'd say it cost at least a couple hundred. I'm going to read it for you.
They gaze at a framed plaque.
In recognition of his outstanding achievement in the field of child psychology, his dedication to his work, and his continued efforts to improve the quality of life.
He swigs some wine, and Anna takes it away.
concentrate. Oh. His continuing efforts to improve the quality of life for countless children and their families, the city of Philadelphia proudly bestows upon its son, Dr. Malcolm Crowe, that's you, the merest citation for professional excellence. They called you their son.
Wow. We should hang it in the bathroom.
Anna gazes solemnly into Malcolm's eyes.
This is an important night for us. Finally, someone is recognizing the sacrifices you've made. That you have put everything second, including me, for those families that they're talking about. They're also saying that my husband has a gift. You have a gift that teaches children how to be strong in situations where most adults would piss on themselves. I believe what they wrote is real.
He kisses her fingertips.
Thank you.
I would like some wine in a glass. I would not like it in a mug. I would not like it in a jug.
Upstairs, Malcolm and Anna kiss as they enter a darkened bedroom. He reaches into an adjoining bathroom and flicks on a light. With a seductive grin, Anna pulls off her sweater. Malcolm strips off his suit vest and flings it across the room. His smile fades. Anna stares at the floor by a window, then backs away.
Malcolm.
He steps toward her outstretched hand. Shards of glass lie scattered by an overturned telephone and a leather briefcase. A shadow darts across them. They turn and stare at the bathroom's brightly lit doorway. Anna hangs back as Malcolm slowly makes his way toward the light. Peering into the bathroom, Malcolm sees clothes scattered on the tile floor. Then a trembling brown-haired young man in dingy underwear. Malcolm freezes.
Don't move. Don't make a sound.
The man's agitated gaze shifts toward Malcolm.
This is 47 Locust Street. You've broken a window and entered a private residence.
You don't know so many things.
There are no needles or prescription drugs of any kind in this house.
The young man steps into the doorway. A streak of white hair runs along his temple. He stifles a sob.
You know why you're afraid when you're alone?
Anna's brow furrows.
I do.
What do you want?
What he promised me! I want what he promised me.
Oh, my God.
Do I know you?
Don't you know me, hero? Don't you even remember your own patience?
Malcolm blinks, searching the man's anguished face.
Downtown clinic. Single-parent family. Possible mood disorder. I was afraid. You told me I was having trouble coping with my parents' divorce. You were wrong. Now look at me! I don't want to be afraid no more.
Just give me a minute to
think. I waited 10 years for you! I'm not giving you nothing!
Ben Friedkin.
Some people, they call me Freak.
Ronald Sumner.
I am a freak, look at me.
Vincent Gray.
The thin young man sags against the doorframe.
I do remember you. Quiet. Very smart. Compassionate. Unusually compassionate.
You forgot Cursed.
He glares at Malcolm.
You failed me. You failed me!
Vincent turns and steps toward the sink.
Vincent, I'm sorry if I was...
Red scratches mark his naked back.
You. But if you just let me try...
He returns with a pistol.
You just give me a chance.
As Malcolm reels back onto the bed, Vincent lifts the gun to his own temple. Anna rushes to Malcolm, who clutches his side.
No, don't talk. Shh.
Fade to black. Now, on an overcast day, three-story row houses face each other across a landscaped plaza. Words appear. The next fall. South Philadelphia. On one side of the plaza, Malcolm sits on a bench wearing a trench coat. He studies a legal pad of handwritten notes on his lap. Across the plaza, a heavy wooden door opens. A young boy emerges. Malcolm glances down at his notes and focuses on a name, Cole Sear, age 9. He scans words circled in blue ink. Parental status, divorced. Acute anxiety. Socially isolated. Possible mood disorder. The boy locks the door. A patch of white grows in his tousled brown hair. Fishing a large pair of glasses from a satchel, he puts them on. Malcolm packs up his briefcase, then glances up. He spots the boy moving away on the other side of the plaza's central garden. Malcolm tucks his briefcase under his arm and follows. Glancing briefly at passers-by, he quickens his pace to keep up. The scurrying boy rounds the end of the plaza, crosses Malcolm's path, and continues down the sidewalk at a hurried trot. Now at a full run, the boy heads down a narrow cobblestone street lined with wrought iron fences. Behind him, Malcolm jogs to a stop. He watches the boy tug open a massive red door with scrolling metalwork hinges and slip inside. A bemused smile flickers at the corners of Malcolm's lips as his gaze trails up at the ornate facade of a colonial church. Inside, dark wooden pews flank a wide central aisle leading up to a white marble altar. Eight rows back, a toy soldier stands on the arm of a pew. As Malcolm approaches, the crouching boy carefully retrieves his soldier.
It's okay, Cole. My name is Dr. Malcolm Crowe. We were supposed to meet today, but I missed our appointment. I'm sorry.
Hunkered between the pews, Cole sets up more soldiers. Malcolm sits in the row in front of him.
In the olden days, in Europe, people used to hide out in churches. They would claim sanctuary.
Cole rises and sits, peering seriously at Malcolm through his oversized glasses.
What were they hiding from?
Malcolm turns to face him.
Bad people, mostly. People that wanted to put them in jail. Hurt them.
Cole glances away.
Noticed your eyeglasses. They don't have any lenses in them.
They're my dad's. The lenses hurt my eyes.
What were you talking about with your soldiers when I came in?
De profundis clamo ad te domine. It's called Latin.
Malcolm spots five red scratches on the inside of Cole's wrist.
All your soldiers speak Latin?
No. Just one.
He plucks one off the pew.
Are you a good doctor?
Well, I used to be. I won an award once from the mayor. Had an expensive frame.
Cole frowns thoughtfully at the soldier in his hands, then collects the others. Slinging the satchel across his shoulder, he steps out into the aisle and glances nervously back at Malcolm.
I'm gonna see you again, right?
If that's okay with you.
Cole turns away and shuffles down the aisle. Staring after him, Malcolm gapes as Cole snatches a red-cloaked statuette off a table and continues out the door. Nighttime. Outside a brick townhouse, white pilasters edge a pair of black doors with iron ring handles. Half a block away, Malcolm approaches down a wide, leaf-strewn sidewalk.
It's me.
He pauses in the high-ceilinged front hall, then strolls into the vacant kitchen. An open book lies near a single place setting. In the bedroom, Malcolm sits on the bed beside Anna, who sleeps, clutching a tissue in her fist. Lying on top of the covers, Anna draws an afghan across her chest. Later, Malcolm approaches a door beneath the front stairs and tries the bright red glass knob. He searches his pockets. In the shadowy cellar, he descends the worn wooden steps. Stacks of file boxes clutter the dingy floor. He rifles through one of the file boxes, then sets a worn Latin dictionary on top of a lamplit desk. Later, as his fingers trace down the pages of the thick book, he scribbles notes in the margin of Cole's records. In Latin, the words, De profundis clamo ad te, Domine. He continues to write, then stops, staring off. His hand moves away, revealing the passage. Out of the depths, I cry to you, O Lord. Now, an early dawn sky silhouettes a sculpture of a man and woman. Rosy sunlight warms the bronze figures. Downtown, skyscrapers dominate the horizon. Now a husky puppy peers out of a laundry basket. A curvy, full-lipped redhead in her 30s grabs a shiny, fitted blouse out of a dryer and slips it on. Wearing an indigo-blue pencil skirt, she buttons her blouse with one hand and tosses clothes into a washing machine with the other.
Cole!
Shuffling into the kitchen, she closes a drawer and two cabinets.
Cole!
The boy walks in, wearing a necktie.
Hey, your Cocoa Puffs are getting soggy.
He sits, laying his palms on the formica tabletop.
Let me see. Oh, honey, you got the spot. Head up.
Cole glances around the kitchen as she unclips his necktie. She returns to the laundry room, fishes a clean tie out of the dryer, then walks back to the kitchen. A dozen cabinets and drawers are open. Cole stares anxiously up from his seat, his small fingers splayed on the dark gray tabletop.
Something you're looking for, baby?
She eyes her son cautiously.
Pop-Tarts?
They're right here.
Oh.
Clutching the necktie, his mom glances at the wall of open cabinets, then back at Cole.
What are you thinking, Mama?
Lots of things.
Anything bad about me?
Hey, look at my face. I was not thinking something bad about you. Got it?
She stares directly into his eyes.
Got it.
She clips on his tie.
That's Tommy.
Okay, you tuck it in. Hey, Cole! You want this?
She grabs a foil Pop-Tart packet and hands it to him as he races out. Planting her fist on her hip, his mother frowns at the formica tabletop. Beside the bowl of Cocoa Puffs, a clammy handprint slowly fades away. From a second-story window, Cole's mom peers down at the brick plaza. A boy takes Cole's bag, throws an arm around him, and waves up to Cole's mom as they hurry off.
Hey, freak, how'd you like that arm around the shoulder bit?
I just made that up. I went with it. It's great actors do. It's called improv.
Cole takes back his bag. As Tommy walks ahead, Cole throws him an icy stare. Later, kids hurry into a building. Alone on the street, Cole removes his fleecy hunting cap and glances up at the school's brownstone facade. Dead leaves blow past Cole's feet as he walks alone into the building. Now in her living room, Cole's mom stares vacantly past Malcolm, who sits across from her. They look up as Cole comes in.
Hey, baby.
Cole stares at Malcolm.
How was your day?
Wearing a thick cardigan sweater, she walks over and kneels beside her son.
You know, you can tell me things if you need to.
Cole nods.
Oh, you know what I did today? I won the Pennsylvania lottery in the morning. I quit my jobs. And I ate a big picnic in the park with lots of chocolate mousse pie. And then I swim in the fountain all afternoon. What do you do?
In the living room, Malcolm listens, smiling to himself.
I was picked first for kickball teams at recess. I hit a grand slam to win the game. Everybody lifted me up on their shoulders and carried me around cheering.
He grins at his mom.
In that case, I am going to make you some triangle pancakes. You got an hour.
Glancing into the living room, she walks out. Malcolm leans forward in his chair and turns to Cole.
Hey.
Cole gives him a sideways stare, walks cautiously into the room, then stops.
Want to sit?
Looking at the chair opposite Malcolm, Cole shakes his head.
Don't feel like talking today?
Cole's small, wide-set eyes blink. He shakes his head.
Want to play a game?
Cole watches him.
It's a mind-reading game. Here's how it works. I read your mind. If what I say is right, you take one step towards the chair. If what I say is wrong, you take one step back towards the doorway. If you reach the chair, you sit down. If you reach the door, you can go. Want to play?
Cole inhales deeply, glances toward the kitchen, then back at Malcolm. Exhaling, he gives Malcolm a hesitant nod.
Okay.
Malcolm shakes out his hands and rolls his head. Closing his eyes, he presses his fingertips to his temples. Malcolm opens his eyes and peers at Cole.
When your mother and father were first divorced, your mom went to see a doctor like me, and he didn't help her. So you think I'm not going to be able to help you?
Cole's worried brow softens. He takes one step toward the chair. Closing his eyes again, Malcolm touches his temples. He opens his eyes and folds his hands in front of him.
You're worried that she said she told him things. Things she couldn't tell anyone else. Secrets.
Cole's sad blue eyes widen. His gaze fixed on Malcolm, he takes another step closer.
You have a secret, but you don't want to tell me.
Cole blinks at him and takes one more step, his black shoes now inches from the chair leg. Malcolm glances down at a large watch hanging around the boy's wrist.
Your dad gave you that watch as a present just before he went away.
Cole's brow wrinkles, and his gaze falters. He takes a step backwards.
You forgot it in a drawer. Doesn't work.
Malcolm licks his lips and drops his gaze. His eyes narrow. He takes a breath, studies the floor, then glances at Cole.
You keep pretty quiet in school, but you're a good student. You've never really been in any serious trouble.
Cole's small, tight lips part, and he steps back. Shifting in his seat, Malcolm frowns.
We were supposed to draw a picture. Anything we wanted. I drew a man. Got hurt in the neck by another man with a screwdriver.
You saw that on TV, Cole?
Cole moves farther away.
Everyone got upset. They had a meeting. Mom started crying. I don't draw like that anymore.
How do you draw now?
Draw people smiling, dogs running, rainbows. They don't have meetings about rainbows.
No, I guess they don't.
Cole turns, looking up and down at the air beside him. With a troubled frown, he looks back at Malcolm.
What am I thinking now?
I don't know what you're thinking now.
Malcolm wrings his hands as Cole takes another slow step back.
I was thinking, you're nice. But you can't help me.
Cole blinks sadly at him, then walks away. Now in a restaurant, Anna sits alone at a linen-covered table. Malcolm makes his way through the busy dining room toward her.
I thought you meant the other Italian restaurant I asked you to marry me in.
Anna, wearing a form-fitting red dress, stares down at a small vase of flowers in front of her.
I'm so sorry, Anna.
She cocks her head.
I just can't seem to keep track of time. And I didn't have a very good session today.
Ignoring her half-eaten dessert, Anna takes a slow sip of coffee.
They're both so similar. Same mannerism, same expression, same things hanging over their head. I think it might be some kind of abuse. Cole has scratches on his arm. I think they might be fingernail cuts, defensive cuts maybe, I don't know. And maybe a teacher or a neighbor. I don't think it's the mother. I've seen her with him and it doesn't seem to fit. Or I could just be wrong. Maybe he's just a kid who likes to climb trees a lot.
A waitress walks by, setting the check on the table. Malcolm reaches for it, but Anna slides it toward her and signs.
Anna. I know that I've been a little distant. I know that it makes you mad. I just feel like I'm being given a second chance and I don't want it to slip away.
She stares at the table.
Happy anniversary.
Clutching her purse, Anna rises and walks out past him. Malcolm rests his head in his hand. Fade to black.
Stop looking at me. I don't like when people look at me like that.
Now, Cole and Malcolm stroll along a brick sidewalk.
I walk this way to school with Tommy Tomasino.
He your best buddy?
He hates me.
Do you hate him?
No.
Did your mom set that up?
Yes.
Did you ever talk to your mom about how things are with Tommy?
I don't tell her things.
Why not?
Because she doesn't look at me like everybody else, and I don't want her to. I don't want her to know.
Know what?
That I'm a freak.
Hey. You are not a freak. Okay? Don't you believe anybody that tries to convince you of that. That's bullshit. You don't have to go through your life believing that. Okay?
Cole stares at him.
Come on.
His eyes fixed on Malcolm, Cole follows him across the street.
You said the S word.
Yeah. I know. Sorry.
Now in her apartment, Cole's mom piles clothes into a laundry basket while listening to a Walkman. Shivering, she zips up her gray sweatshirt, then adjusts a heating dial on the wall. In the hallway, she collects more laundry, then sets the basket on a wooden side table. Scanning a group of framed photographs on the wall, her gaze settles on an image of Cole looking downward. To his right, at head level, a small arc of white light appears in the photo. Cole's mom leans closer and brushes her long red fingernails over the light. Her wide, inquisitive eyes glance up at another photo. In it, she smiles beside her son. Cole's serious eyes stare off to one side, toward another arc of light. Her lips parted, she inspects another photo of her two-year-old boy near another nebulous light. Now in the living room.
So your dad lives in Pittsburgh with a lady that works in a toll booth.
Malcolm sits on a plaid cushioned couch.
What if she has to pee when she's working? I think she just holds it.
Cole plays on the floor behind him.
I was just thinking about that myself.
You ask a lot of questions about Dad today. How come?
Well, sometimes we do things to draw attention, to express our feelings about certain issues, divorce, whatever. For example, a person might leave something on a desk for someone else to find.
Cole stops. Elsewhere, the puppy plays in the laundry.
Do you know what free association writing is, Cole?
In Cole's room, his mother picks up clothes off the floor.
Free association writing is when you take a pencil in your hand and you put the pencil to a piece of paper and you start writing. And you don't look at what you're writing or think about what you're writing. You just keep your hand moving.
She plucks a shirt off his desk.
And after a while, to keep your hand moving long enough, words and thoughts start coming out that you didn't even know you had in you.
She spots a notebook page scrawled with red ink.
Something you
removing her headphones, she gapes at the phrases, "Quiet the damn baby" and "Kill all you bastards."
Have you ever done any free association writing, Cole?
More phrases. The burning and what the hell is going on?
Yes.
What did you write?
Upset words.
Back in the living room.
Did you ever write any upset words before your father left?
Cole remains behind the couch.
I don't remember.
Can you do something for me?
Malcolm stands and puts on his trench coat.
I want you to think about what you want to get out of our time together. What our goals should be.
Cole looks up.
Something I want?
Malcolm gazes at the boy's curious face.
If you could change something in your life, anything at all, what would it be?
Cole approaches him.
Instead of something I want, can it be something I don't want?
Okay.
I don't want to be scared anymore.
Now a hand circles a textbook passage. Resulting bruises may be self-inflicted.
You gonna get that?
In the cellar, Malcolm tosses down a pen. Rubbing his eyes, he looks up at the ceiling, then cocks his head.
Are you gonna get that?
Hi.
Don't you see enough of me at the store?
Yeah, I'm on my way out to the flea market in the Amish country, and I thought maybe you want to come along and show me how to buy it, one of these things.
I don't know if I can deal with the Amish today. Can't curse or spit or anything around them.
I just figured maybe you just wanted to get out and get some air, because you'd seemed kind of down lately.
I'm okay.
All right. Well, do you think maybe I should stop by on my way back, show you what I got, because that wouldn't be a problem.
No, I can see him on Monday.
Sure, yeah, it's fine, understood. Okay, so I guess I'm gonna get going then, and I'll speak to you later.
Don't step in the horse manure.
Oh, thank you very much.
Peering out of a street-level window, Malcolm spies a lanky young man trotting down the front steps. He stops at the curb, then starts back toward the door.
Keep moving, cheese dick.
The young man punches the air in frustration, then hastily brushes fallen leaves off the hood of his black SUV. Now in a classroom, a curly-haired boy writes, "I will not hit or kick anyone," on the blackboard. Cole watches, resting his chin on a desk and blowing a pencil across the surface.
Can anybody guess what city was capital of the United States of America from 1790 to 1800?
The tall, 30-ish teacher scans the class.
I'll give you a hint. It's the city you live in.
Philadelphia.
Right, right. Philadelphia is one of the oldest cities in this country. A lot of generations have lived here and died here. Almost any place you go in the city has a history and a story behind it. Even the school and the grounds it sits on. Can anyone guess what this building was used for 100 years ago, before you went to school here? Before I went to this school, even?
Cole glances at his classmates, then tentatively raises his hand.
Yes, Cole.
They used to hang people here.
The curly-haired boy stops writing. The teacher squints at Cole.
No, that's not correct. Where'd you hear that?
They pull the people in crying and kissing their families by. People watching spit at them.
Cole, this building was a legal courthouse. Laws were passed here, some of the very first laws of this country. This whole building was full of lawyers, lawmakers.
They were the ones that hanged everybody.
I don't know which one of these guys told you that, but they were just trying to scare you.
Cole shoots a self-conscious glance at Tommy Tomasimo, who stares back, eyebrows arched. At the head of the class, the teacher fixes his gaze on Cole.
I don't like people looking at me like that.
Cole glares at his teacher.
Like what?
Stop it!
I don't know how else to look.
He steps toward Cole.
You're a stuttering Stanley!
The teacher blinks at him.
Excuse me?
You talked funny when you went to school here. You talked funny all the way to high school.
What?
You shouldn't look at people. It makes them feel bad.
How did you...
Stop looking at me!
Who have you been speaking to?
Stuttering Stanley! Stuttering Stanley! Stuttering
the uniformed children gawk as Cole covers his eyes.
Stop that!
Freak!
The teacher glares at Cole, his eyes wide and teary. Later, Cole sits in a high-backed leather chair at a long mahogany table. Malcolm walks in with his briefcase.
Hey, big guy.
He sits across from Cole.
How's it going?
I don't want to talk about anything right now.
Okay.
Slumped down in the shiny wing chair, Cole stares out a row of windows beside him. Following his gaze, Malcolm looks out the window for a moment, then reaches into his gray suit vest pocket.
You like magic?
Cole closes his eyes, then turns and looks at Malcolm.
Observe. Magic penny. Looks like an ordinary penny. But I do my little magic shake and...
He holds out two fists.
Now it's in my right hand. But that's not the end of the magic trick. I do another little shake and...
He thumps his chest.
Right there in the vest pocket. That's not the end of the magic trick. I do another little shake and...
He holds out his hands and flips one over.
Right back in the left hand where it started.
Cole gives him a chilly, sideways stare.
That isn't magic.
What are you talking about? Of course it's magic.
You just kept the penny in that hand the whole time.
Malcolm stares at the coin in his open palm, then furrows his brow.
You think so?
I didn't know you were funny.
Malcolm drops the penny into his vest pocket and folds his hands on the table. Later, in the front hall of his townhouse, Malcolm sets down his briefcase and takes off his gray suit coat.
Malcolm, sit your cute butt down and listen up.
He looks at the TV in the living room.
No doubt about it. Anna is like my sister. And you better make her happy. And I'm not talking about no, this tastes like real butter kind of happy. I'm talking about, what's that girl? Julie Andrews, twirling around like a mental patient on a mountaintop kind of happy. Now, that's the kind of
taking a seat
I'm
on the sofa,
about.
Malcolm grins at the woman on TV. She wears a pink bridesmaid's dress and holds
her,
a microphone.
But she said she knew she loved you from the first time she met you on the street.
Malcolm's eyes glisten.
She'd do anything for you.
He smiles.
I love you guys. My nose is running target.
The woman waves a white-gloved hand. Malcolm grins warmly as he watches himself and Anna on their wedding day, sharing a kiss, then dancing cheek to cheek. He glances back toward the front hall. Upstairs, he walks into their bedroom, unbuttoning his vest. Eyeing the open bathroom door, he walks in and sees Anna's reflection in the medicine cabinet mirror. Behind a steamy glass shower door, she caresses her face under a stream of water. Malcolm's gaze shifts back to the open cabinet and a prescription bottle filled with red capsules. He walks over and reads the label, Zoloft, antidepressant. With a concerned frown, Malcolm watches Anna rub her face in the shower and heave a sigh. Downstairs, Malcolm glances at the red glass knob of the cellar door. He walks over and tries it. He searches his pockets. Now in a stately home, Cole sits at a table set with paper party hats.
Then you do the magic shake.
Another boy watches him.
The penny is moved from my pocket, all the way back to the hand it started.
Cole reveals a penny in his open palm.
That's stupid.
The boy stares at Cole.
It's supposed to be funny. It's stupid. I want my penny back.
In another room, Cole's mom helps set up.
He doesn't get invited places, so it's our pleasure. Last time was a Chuck E. Cheese party a year ago. He hid in one of those purple plastic tunnels and didn't come out.
Chuck E. who?
Cheese. It's a kid's place.
Eavesdropping, Cole sits at the base of a wide spiral staircase wearing a red sweater. He glances up as a bright red balloon drifts up to the third floor ceiling and settles by a circular light fixture. Rising, Cole ascends the carpeted stairs, his fingers running lightly along the curved wooden banister. His shadow moves across the rounded plaster wall as he nears the third floor. Slowing down, Cole peers anxiously toward the head of the stairs.
Madam, is someone out there? Open this door, please. Come on. I can't breathe.
Cole stops.
If you can hear me, open this door.
He stares at the open door of a dark crawl space.
The master's horse. Open this door, I'll break through it and grab you!
The star of the commercial always gets his own trailer.
For what?
He's placed to think about his character alone.
He only had one line.
At the foot of the stairs, Tommy leans beside a scrawny kid.
Darren, check it out.
They peer up at Cole.
My dad made me invite him.
With a mischievous grin, Tommy starts up the winding staircase, followed by Darren. Leaning out over the railing, they keep an eye on Cole. Cole takes panicky, shallow breaths, his eyes fixed on the door. He turns around as the boys approach.
Happy birthday, Darren.
Tommy glances at the doorway.
Is there something you want to see in there?
No.
Cole shakes his head, and Tommy glances down thoughtfully.
We're going to put on a pretend play. Want to be in it?
Okay.
It's called Locked in the Dungeon.
Yeah, Cole, and you get to be the one locked in the dungeon.
They grab Cole under the arms, stuff him into the crawl space, and slam the door. The heavy, hinged door rattles. On the ceiling, the red balloon pops. Downstairs, well-dressed mothers glance up at the ceiling. Cole's mom peers upstairs with a curious pout. Heading up the winding stairs, she passes the curly-haired boy, his neck craned toward the top. Her trot quickens, and she pushes past Tommy and Darren.
Cole?
Kneeling, she pounds on the closed door. As Cole's mom frantically yanks the brass knob, the other mothers begin to gather on the stairs. Releasing the knob, she clutches her temples and gapes helplessly at the gawking mothers. Cole's mom twists the knob and the door opens. She lifts her son's limp body out into the light.
The test would indicate he did not have a seizure.
At a hospital.
He's doing fine. Have just some rest. He could go home tonight.
Seated in a waiting room chair, Cole's mom nods at the doctor, then chokes back a sob.
There's some cuts and bruises on your son that are concerning me.
Malcolm leans back in another chair and looks away.
Yeah, those are from sports.
The doctor blinks at her. She gives him a cool stare.
You think I hurt my child?
She glances away.
You think I'm a bad mother?
Mrs. Sloan over there? She's a social worker with the hospital. And she's going to ask you a couple procedural questions.
What happened to my child today? Something was happening to him, physically happening. Something was very wrong.
Later, in a shadowy hospital room, Cole lies in bed.
Hey.
Malcolm walks in, drops his coat and briefcase on another bed, and sits on a stool. He smiles at the long black socks that hang over the boy's toes.
Your father used to tell you bedtime stories?
Covered in a pink cotton blanket, Cole stares out the window with worried eyes. Malcolm licks his lips thoughtfully.
Once upon a time, there was this young prince. And he decided that he wanted to go for a drive. And he got his driver and they started driving. Driving a lot, and they drove so much that he fell asleep, and...
Cole looks at him.
Then he woke up, and he realized they were still driving. This was a very long trip.
Dr. Crow, you haven't told bedtime stories before.
Not too many, no.
Well, you have to add some twists and stuff.
Malcolm grins.
Okay, some twists.
Like what kind of twists? Give me an example.
Maybe they run out of gas.
They run out of gas. That's good, because they're driving, right?
Tell me a story about why you're sad.
You think I'm sad?
Cole nods.
What makes you think that?
Your eyes told me.
Not supposed to talk about stuff like that.
Cole, his small brow furrowed in an anxious stare, turns back toward the window.
Once upon a time, there was this person named Malcolm. He worked with children. He loved it. He loved it more than anything else.
Cole turns his face to Malcolm.
And then one night he found out that he made a mistake with one of them. He couldn't help that one. And he can't stop thinking about it. He can't forget. Ever since then, things have been different. He's not the same person that he used to be. And his wife doesn't like the person that he's become. They barely speak anymore. They're like strangers. And then one day Malcolm meets this wonderful little boy. Really cool little boy. Reminds him a lot of the other one. And Malcolm decides to try and help this new boy. He feels that if he can help this new boy, it'd be like helping that other one, too.
How does the story end?
I don't know.
Cole clutches the blanket up to his chin and shifts his teary gaze. He squeezes his eyes closed, then looks fearfully up at Malcolm. Malcolm's warm eyes gaze intently at Cole.
Okay.
Cole glances down, his wide eyes brimming with tears.
I see dead people.
In your dreams?
Cole shakes his head.
While you're awake?
He nods.
Dead people, like, in graves and coffins?
Walking around like regular people. They don't see each other. They only see what they want to see. They don't know they're dead.
How often do you see them?
A tear spills down Cole's cheek.
All the time. They're everywhere. You won't tell anyone my secret, right?
No. I promise.
Will you stay here until I fall asleep?
Malcolm smiles. With an exhausted blink, Cole turns his head toward the window, revealing a 2-inch bruise on his pale neck. He shuts his eyes tightly.
Cole, this pathology is more severe than initially assessed.
Outside, Malcolm holds a tape recorder.
He's suffering from visual hallucinations, paranoia, some kind of school-age schizophrenia. Medication and hospitalization may be required.
Malcolm stares at the ground.
And I'm not helping him.
Later, at her apartment, Cole's mother carries her sleeping boy in through the front door. She slides a chain into the lock, drops her keys into a small dish on an entryway table, then heads down the dark, photo-lined hallway. At the end of the hall, she enters Cole's room and passes a small tent made from a red bedspread. As she lays him gently on his unmade bed, their gray and white puppy jumps out of the way. Cole, still wearing a plastic hospital bracelet, curls up on his side. His mother carefully removes his black shoes. Then, picking up his small red sweater, notices two ragged holes in the back. She clicks on a lamp and slides her hand inside the sweater, examining the holes. Dropping it, she touches a tear in Cole's shirt, then looks at his back. A pair of 2-inch-long horizontal scratches mark his skin. Cole's mom bites her lip, fighting back tears. Later, in her bedroom, she dials a phone.
Hi, this is Lynn Sear, Cole's mom. I'd like to talk to you about your boy and his friends keeping their goddamn hands off my son.
Early morning, Cole's brick row house stands against a leaden sky. In the dim living room, magazines lie on a simple coffee table. The front door is bolted and secured with a chain. In the laundry room, gray light falls on the dingy wainscoting. Cole peeks out from his bedroom, his lips pinched anxiously. Craning his neck, he peers down the darkened hall. Wearing a white undershirt and briefs, Cole wavers, clenching his knees together, then rushes down the hallway into the bathroom. As Cole stands at the toilet, his back to the open door, the temperature on a thermostat dial drops to 52 degrees. A figure passes the doorway. Cole slowly turns his head and looks out the door with a worried frown. He lets out a frosty breath. Facing the doorway, his bare shoulders tensed, Cole steps out of the bathroom and heads cautiously down the hall toward the lighted kitchen. Standing in the kitchen doorway, Cole relaxes.
Mama?
No. Dinner is not ready.
A bruised woman surrounded by open cupboards.
You can't hurt me anymore!
She juts out her slashed wrists.
Lenny, you're a terrible husband!
Cole sprints back to his room, scrambles inside his bedspread tent, and flicks on a flashlight. Small shelves lined with armies of religious statuettes cast shadows on the red tent walls.
Once there was a boy, very different from all the other boys.
Now Tommy stands on stage wearing a khaki safari shirt.
And he could speak to the animals.
In the audience, parents raise camcorders as the stage fills with cardboard animals and costumed children. Near the back of the auditorium, Malcolm watches from an uncrowded row.
Did you think the play sucked big time?
In a school hallway.
What?
Tommy Tomasimo acted in a cough syrup commercial. He said everyone was self-conscious and unrealistic. He said the play sucked big time.
This Tommy kid sounds like a real punk.
Cole grins.
I thought the play was excellent. Better than Cats.
Cats?
Never mind.
Malcolm smiles as he strolls down the hall.
Cole, I was really interested in what you told me at the hospital. I'd like to hear more about it.
Malcolm glances down, then stops and looks back. Cole stands frozen about 5 yards behind him.
Cole? What?
Cole glances to his left. At the top of a staircase, 3 people in colonial dress hang by their necks, their eyes open and fixed on Cole. Malcolm peers up the stairs.
Something up there?
He looks up at nothing, then turns back to Cole.
Cole?
Malcolm squats beside him.
I don't see anything.
Cole glances up at him and swallows hard.
Feel it inside, like you're falling down real fast. But you're really just standing still. Do you ever feel the prickly things on the back of your neck?
Yes.
And the tiny hairs on your arm, you know, when they stand up.
Yes.
That's them. They get mad. It gets cold.
His jaw trembling, Cole stares at the floor and takes a shallow breath. Malcolm looks back up the stairs into the empty gymnasium, then gently shakes his head, his brow pinched with concern.
I don't see anything. Are you sure they're there?
Cole looks up at him.
Please make them leave.
I'm working on it. Come on.
Malcolm rises. Fade to black. Now, in a public fountain, water cascades over the hollow eyes of a verdigris Native American. Outside a supermarket, Cole sits in a metal cart nestled among groceries as his mom pushes him. Noticing his serious expression, she pushes the cart faster, then runs. As they race between parked cars, Cole grins, his arms outstretched, and closes his eyes in the bright sunlight. Dropping his arms, he peers back at his mom, who flashes him a wide-eyed grin. Now, a dark bedroom.
Mommy, Daddy.
A boy stands at the foot of his parents' bed.
My throat hurts.
A woman spoons medicine to the boy. It's Tommy Tomasimo. He glances pitifully up at his TV parents. Later, he plays fetch with a dog outside.
Pedia E's cough suppressant.
At home, Cole throws a shoe at the TV.
Cole.
His mom adjusts a thermostat.
I don't care what they say, this thing is broken.
Pulling her cardigan tighter, she takes a seat at the kitchen table across from Cole, who wears big leather gloves.
Take them off.
Cole pulls off the gloves and lays them beside his plate.
I don't want them on my table.
Cole puts the gloves on his lap, then cuts a piece of meat with his fork.
I saw what was in your bureau drawer when I was cleaning. Got something you want to confess?
Cole stares at her.
The bumblebee pendant? Why do you keep taking it?
Cole sets his fork down and folds his hands on the table.
It was Grandma's. You know, what if it broke? You know how sad I'd be.
You'd cry because you miss Grandma so much.
That's right.
She focuses on her green beans.
Sometimes people think they lose things. And they really didn't lose them, it just gets moved.
So did you move the bumblebee pendant?
He shakes his head. His mom stops eating, and Cole stares at her.
Don't get mad.
So who moved it this time? Maybe someone came in our house, took the bumblebee pendant out of my closet, and placed it nicely in your drawer.
Maybe.
God, I am so tired, Cole. I'm tired in my body. I'm tired in my mind. I'm tired in my heart. I need some help. You know, I don't know if you noticed, but our little family isn't doing so good. I mean, I've been praying, but I must not be praying right. Looks like we're just going to have to answer each other's prayers. If we can't talk to each other, we're not going to make it. Now tell me, baby, I won't get mad, honey. Did you take the bumblebee pendant?
Cole, his brow knitted in distress, folds his small hands against his chin. He shakes his head.
No.
You've had enough roast beef. You need to leave the table.
She picks at her food.
Go!
Pressing her fingers to her temple, she stares down at the table as Cole leaves the room. Brushing aside her auburn bangs, Cole's mom rests her head in her hand. In the hall, the puppy races out of Cole's bedroom. As Cole stares after it, a teenage boy walks behind him into Cole's room. Cole wheels around. The boy comes back out.
Hey, come on. I'll show you where my dad keeps his gun. Come on.
The boy turns around, and the back of his skull is missing. The puppy crouches in a broom closet.
Sebastian, come on.
Mama?
Cole appears in the doorway behind his mother. Wiping her tears, she glances at him.
If you're not very mad, better sleep in your bed tonight.
Look at my face. I'm not very mad.
Kneeling on the floor, she opens her arms and Cole crawls onto her lap.
Baby, why are you shaking?
She clutches him tightly.
Cole, what's wrong? Oh, God. Please tell me. Oh, please.
Oh. Now, inside an antique shop, a young couple stands beside Anna. They peer at a ring in a glass jewelry case.
It's Edwardian. Beautifully worked with mine-cut diamonds and an actual color Burmese sapphire. It's timeless.
The wide-eyed woman smiles at her gaping fiancé.
You, got anything a little plainer?
Plainer? You want a plain ring to go with your plain fiancé? Is that how it is?
Oh, baby, don't get in a tizzy.
She glares at him.
So beautiful. You're like a Burmese sapphire all by yourself. You don't need all that.
Uh-huh. Why don't you try it on and see how you both feel about it?
Anna plucks the ring from the case and slips it onto the woman's finger.
There, how does that feel?
The woman grins and nods.
I think this piece communicates a longing. I imagine that the woman who owned it loved a man that she couldn't be with.
Did he have wavy hair and chestnut eyes?
What?
I don't know, but a lot of the pieces in this store communicate, and I think you should choose a piece that speaks to you. I think maybe when people own things and then they pass away, a part of themselves gets printed on those things. Like fingerprints.
Later, Anna puts the ring in a box.
I'll just wrap it up.
The lanky young man carries a bench up from the shop basement.
You don't need a guy with a master's. You need a wrestler with a neck larger than his head.
No, I need a wrestler with a master's.
Anna holds out a box.
What's this?
Happy birthday.
From you?
Mm-hmm.
Taking the small box, the young man sits on the bench and opens it. Anna sits beside him as he pulls out a black book.
It's a first edition.
Wow. Oh, this is too much.
No. Took it out of your Christmas bonus.
Mine is perfect, Anna. Thanks.
He gives her a hug. They separate, exchanging a gentle smile. Then he pulls her close again.
What do you want more than anything?
I don't know.
I told you what I want.
Anna's eyes dart to the front of the shop.
I know what I want.
She and her coworker race to the front door.
I want to be able to talk to my wife again.
The glass door pane is shattered.
The way we used to talk to each other.
Anna goes outside.
Like there was no one else in the world except us.
In a nearby alley, Malcolm strides away.
How are we going to do that?
Now Malcolm stares past Cole and takes a deep breath.
I can't be your doctor anymore. I haven't paid enough attention to my family. Bad things happen when you do that. Do you understand? I'm going to transfer you. I know two psychologists.
Don't fail me.
Malcolm flinches.
Don't give up. You're the only one who can help me. I know it.
I can't help you. Someone else can help you.
Malcolm chokes back tears.
You believe me, right?
Malcolm avoids Cole's pleading gaze.
Dr. Crow, you believe my secret, right?
I don't know how to answer that, Cole.
His brow tensed, Malcolm casts a stoic gaze across the room. Cole slides a penny across the table.
How can you help me if you don't believe me?
Cole stares into Malcolm's unblinking eyes.
Magic's real.
Now our view drifts toward the black doors of Malcolm's brick townhouse. Inside, Malcolm rocks slowly in a desk chair, his eyes lost in a thoughtful gaze.
Do you know why you're afraid when you're alone?
He remembers the trembling intruder.
I do.
In the cellar, Malcolm's gaze flickers. A cardboard file box is labeled Vincent Gray.
I'm sorry about that, Vincent. I hope I didn't leave you alone too long.
A cassette tape plays.
Whew. It's cold in here. Vincent, why are you crying?
You won't believe.
Malcolm rewinds the tape.
Sorry about that, Vincent. I hope I didn't leave you alone too long. It's cold in here.
Malcolm's brow furrows as he listens, then rewinds
Vincent.
Again.
It's cold in here.
He winds the tape further back.
Nah, you know what? I never liked him either.
When I was a kid, I had this blood test done, and I threw up chili cheese fries all over this male nurse.
Excuse me, Dr. Reed is online too.
Vincent, will you excuse me? I have to take this. Just give me a minute, okay?
Okay.
Slowly shaking his head, Malcolm blinks, then cocks his head slightly. Narrowing his eyes in a concentrated stare, he turns the volume dial on the cassette player up to 6. Malcolm shakes his head again. Glancing up, he reaches out and hits the stop button. His mouth agape, Malcolm turns the volume up to 10. He presses the play button. Later, in the church, Malcolm strides quickly down the center aisle.
You been running around?
He looks up at the balcony. Cole collects plastic army men from a railing.
Make you feel better?
Malcolm nods.
I like to run around. It's good exercise.
Cole gives him a cool sideways stare.
You want to ask me questions now?
In the aisle below, Malcolm shakes his head.
Want to be a Lance Corporal in Company M 3rd Battalion 7th Marines? We're being dispatched in the Quang Nam province.
Maybe later.
Cole studies Malcolm's serious expression.
Something happened, didn't it?
Malcolm nods.
You wigging out?
Cole ambles along the balcony railing.
Yes. I think I am.
Later, in the center aisle.
You know what yo no quiero morir means? It's Spanish. It means I don't want to die. What do you think these ghosts want when they talk to you?
Cole steps back across the aisle and slides into a wooden pew.
I want you to think about it, Cole. I want you to think about it really carefully. What do you think they want?
Just help.
That's right. That's what I think, too. They just want help, even the scary ones. And I think I might know a way to make them go away.
How?
Listen to them.
What if they don't want help? What if they're just angry and they just want to hurt somebody?
I don't think that's the way it works.
How do you know for sure?
I don't.
Nighttime. Malcolm strolls down a lamplit sidewalk. As he approaches his front stoop, the door opens and Anna's co-worker comes out. Malcolm stops. The young man strides over to his parked SUV and climbs in.
Hey!
The man doesn't respond.
Hey! Hey!
Frowning, Malcolm stares after him. He turns toward the closed townhouse doors, his mouth slack, then looks back down the empty street. Fade to black. Now Cole sleeps inside his bedspread tent.
What's happening?
The puppy, Sebastian, stirs under Cole's arm.
Cole!
Cole's eyes open. With a troubled frown, he peers out of the tent, then takes off down the dark hall, Sebastian at his heels. Entering his mom's room, he slowly approaches the bed where she writhes beneath the covers.
What's happening to you? Is someone hurting you? I'll kick their ass.
Crouched by her side, Cole lays his small hand on his mother's cheek. She settles.
Mama, you sleep now.
He strokes her face. Later, in his room, Cole kneels outside the entrance of his tent. As he exhales, his breath streams out in a white haze. Whipping his head around, he stares back down the darkened hall, then jumps to his feet and frantically pins the draping tent flap to its golf club frame. Glancing behind him, he attaches one last clothespin, then scrambles backwards into the tent. He flicks on a flashlight and stares into the beam. Above him, the tent roof pops open. Behind him, a pale, weeping girl kneels, vomit spilling from her mouth. Cole scrambles out, dropping his flashlight. He races to the living room and jumps down behind the couch, his shoulders hunched and trembling. He peeks around the couch at the dim living room, then thoughtfully scans the floor. Later, he stands in the doorway to his bedroom. Cole's dimpled chin trembles as he moves into the room, one cautious step at a time. A figure, covered by the red bedspread, glows in the flashlight's beam. Cole steps closer. Red light falls across his anxious face. Setting his chin, he reaches out a shaky hand. He pulls away the material, revealing the adolescent girl. She clutches her stomach and heaves. As Cole leans away, the girl looks up at him with teary, pleading eyes.
I'm feeling much better now. Do you want to tell me something?
Fade to black. Daytime. On a bus, Cole presses his nose against a window and peers out at Gothic row houses. His gaze settles on a four-story, ivy-covered brownstone with tall windows and a columned entrance. As the bus passes a church cemetery, Cole shrinks back from the window and fixes his gaze straight ahead. Seated beside him, Malcolm glances down at the frowning boy.
Came a long way to visit me, didn't she?
I guess she did.
They exchange a sober stare. Cole glances down and reaches into a crinkled paper bag on his lap. He pulls out a necktie, unbuttons his thick wool coat, and clips the tie to his shirt collar. Later, cars line one side of a suburban street. Groups of people dressed in black head down a sidewalk, carrying flowers and plastic food containers. Malcolm and Cole cross onto the sidewalk and join the mourners. Beside a black limousine, a man in a trench coat steadies a weeping woman, then guides her to a nearby parked car. A man in a suit approaches the couple.
Can you get some water?
The man nods, then with a lingering stare, strides away.
Sister.
As Cole and Malcolm walk slowly up a paved path, they pass a little blonde girl sitting on a swing. Inside a house, well-dressed people stand in small groups. Cole and Malcolm pass a table set with flowers and platters of food.
You know, when I went through this with my father's cancer, I just can't imagine a child being in bed for 2 years.
On a shelf, two candles flank a portrait of the dead girl.
Six different doctors?
I think so, yes.
An older woman leans against the dining room wall, dabbing her nose with a tissue. Two men in suits stand by the buffet.
I just heard the little one is falling ill now.
God help them.
Across the crowded room, Malcolm follows Cole up a carpeted staircase. They notice a family portrait on the wall, a smiling couple and their two young daughters. At the top of the stairs, Malcolm stands behind Cole, who stares ahead, his mouth clenched.
Don't go home, okay?
I definitely won't.
With a tense swallow, Cole slowly reaches toward a shiny silver doorknob. The reflection of his hand grows as he grasps the knob tightly and turns it. Inside the room, a shaft of light widens across the soft blue carpet as the door slowly opens. Dozens of videotapes fill the top shelf of a white-painted bookcase. Cole's shadow glides across a wall shelf filled with small porcelain dolls. Beneath it, marionettes dangle from hooks. Cole picks up a jester finger puppet. Standing beside a metal hospital bed, he glances around the girl's room, then fixes his stare on another group of swaying marionettes. Cole starts toward them. A hand shoots out from under the bed, grabbing Cole's ankle. He scrambles away against the wall. Crouched under the bed, the gaunt-faced dead girl slides a scuffed wooden box toward Cole. Downstairs, Cole makes his way through the crowd of mourners, cradling the dark brown box in front of him. He passes a blonde woman in a bright red suit. She stares blankly at the floor as an older woman strokes her hand. Cole's eyes search the mourners' faces as he passes through the living room. Stopping, his gaze falls on a man seated in a chair, his head bowed and his elbows resting on his knees. Malcolm hangs back as Cole carefully steps toward the slouched man.
Mister?
The man blinks and looks up.
Excuse me, mister. Are you Kara's daddy?
He nods. Cole glances down at the box in his arms, then extends it toward the man.
It's for you. She wanted to tell you something.
Kara's dad slowly takes the box. Cole's mournful gaze lingers as he backs away from the man, turns, then walks out past Malcolm. Watching him go, Kira's dad sets the box on his knees, then stares soberly at it. Licking his lip, he slides his fingers to its rounded corners and lifts the hinged lid. Inside, the mirrored top reflects an unlabeled videotape. Later, a video plays.
Oh, no,
shot from the back of a bookshelf, it shows two marionettes dangling on a miniature puppet stage. Kira's dad watches with wide,
like
tear-filled
dance?
Eyes.
Well, actually, I just came with my friends. Oh, well, how about this? We can dance for a little bit, and if you don't like the way I dance, you can kick me.
A grin flickers across Kira's dad's face. In the video, the puppets stop dancing. The stage pulls back as Kira wheels it away from the bookshelf, then jumps into bed. In the living room, people gather behind Kira's dad. His eyes brim with tears. In the video, a blonde woman enters carrying a tray with a bowl of soup. She sets the tray on the shelf in front of the hidden camera, then walks away. Returning with a large bottle, she examines the yellow label, then measures out a capful of brown liquid. In the living room, Kira's dad gapes. His brow creases, and his unblinking eyes scan the TV screen. In the video, the woman stirs the soup, then carries the tray over to the hospital bed.
It's time for lunch, Kira.
Her father's parted lips tremble.
Feeling much better now? That's so great, honey. It's time for your food. Can I go outside and eat this?
Oh, I don't know. You know how you get sick in the afternoons.
Kira's dad's quivering face stiffens.
Don't say that it tastes funny, you know. I don't need to hear that.
Kira eats a couple of spoonfuls.
Sammy's mom called.
Static fills the screen. In the dining room, two women whisper and stare past the blonde in the bright red suit. She freezes, then slowly turns around. It's Kira's mom. Kira's dad faces her, backed by a group of frowning guests.
You were keeping her sick.
Kira's mom studies his face, then scans the motionless crowd. She looks back at her husband with wide, questioning eyes. Outside, Cole sits on a swing beside Kira's little sister. He holds the jester puppet in the palm of his hand.
You liked it, she said.
The blonde girl takes the puppet.
She looked out for you. Is Kira coming back? Not anymore.
Nearby, Malcolm's brow furrows. Now, Cole's teacher enters a dressing room and holds up a broom.
Yeah, I think that's enough. That's enough makeup.
They're calling for the stable boy.
Oh, we have to hurry.
A woman leaves Cole. His teacher frowns.
Who were you talking to?
The woman turns, revealing her charred sweater and raw, blistered head, then leaves.
Just practicing my lines.
Cole smiles. Later, they walk upstairs.
Thanks for giving me this part, Mr. Cunningham.
You know, when I went to school here, there was a terrible fire in the section of the theater. They rebuilt the whole thing.
Yeah, I know.
In the school auditorium, parents aim video cameras at the stage, where several kids are dressed as knights and damsels. A boy in a black wizard's robe steps forward.
Only he who is pure of heart can take the sword from the stone. Let the boy try.
Tommy Tomasino lurches over to the wizard. Tommy gives the audience a sullen glance.
But he's a stable boy. Cleans up after the horses.
Silence, village idiot. Let the boy step forward.
The actors part, revealing a 2-foot-high cardboard anvil with a sword stuck in the top. At the back of the auditorium, Malcolm stands in the aisle, watching as Cole steps up to the sword. Dressed in an oversized brown tunic, Cole glances down at the sword, then looks out into the audience. Malcolm nods, and Cole draws the sword from the anvil.
Hail, Hail, Thompson!
Grinning, Cole holds the sword high above his head. The cast kneels around him. The kids parade Cole around, then tumble into a giggling heap in the center of the stage. At the back of the auditorium, Malcolm grins and applauds. Later, Cole paces on the wide sill of a Gothic stained glass window.
I thought you were really great in the play, Cole.
Really?
You know what else?
What?
I thought Tommy Tomasino sucked big time.
Cole slices the air with his sword.
I got an idea how you can talk to your wife. Wait till she's asleep. Then she'll listen to you, and she won't even know it.
Avoiding Malcolm's steady gaze, Cole thrusts the sword half-heartedly.
Not going to see you anymore, am I?
I think we said everything we needed to say. Maybe it's time to say thanks to someone closer to you.
Maybe we can pretend like we're going to see each other tomorrow. Just for pretend.
Swallowing hard, Cole gives him a hopeful grin. Cole purses his lips and nods.
I'm gonna go now.
Malcolm folds his trench coat over his arm. His brow furrows, and he cocks his head at Cole.
I'll see you tomorrow, Cole.
The boy grins warmly and nods, his bright round eyes meeting Malcolm's thoughtful gaze. With a satisfied nod, Malcolm gets up and descends a nearby staircase, his expression sobering. Now on a tree-lined street, a police officer lights a flare and approaches a white sedan. A middle-aged man stands by the car's open door. Behind him, smoke billows from the crumpled grill of a black hatchback. Traffic stands still on both sides of the street.
Jeez, I hope nobody got hurt.
Several cars back, Cole sits beside his mom in an aging Volvo.
You're very quiet. You're mad I missed the play, aren't you?
He shakes his head.
I have two jobs, baby. You know how important they are for us. I give anything to have been there.
Wearing an orange cowl-neck sweater, she glances at him, then peers out the windshield. Cole gives her a concentrated sideways stare.
I'm ready to communicate with you now.
His mom places her hands in her lap and shifts toward him.
Communicate?
Tell you my secrets.
What is it?
He stares at her, unblinking.
You know the accident up there?
Yeah.
Someone got hurt.
They did?
A lady. She died.
Oh my God, but you can see her?
She cranes her head.
Yes.
Where is she?
His worried eyes stay fixed on his mom.
Standing next to my window.
His mom's face slackens. She leans back in her seat, staring apprehensively at Cole, then glances at his window.
Cole, you're scaring me.
They scare me too sometimes.
A blood-streaked woman walks away.
Say?
Cole watches his mom tentatively and nods.
Ghosts.
Her eyes search his face.
You see ghosts, Cole?
He nods.
They want me to do things for them.
They talk to you? They tell you to do things?
They're the ones that used to hurt me. What are you thinking, Mama? You think I'm a freak?
Look at my face. I would never think that about you. Ever. Got it?
Got it.
Cole breaks their gaze, and his mom faces forward, her hands fidgeting in her lap.
Just let me think for a minute.
Cole looks at her.
Grandma says hi.
His mom gapes.
She says she's sorry for taking the bumblebee pendant. She just likes it a lot.
What?
Grandma comes to visit me sometimes.
Cole, that's very wrong. Grandma's gone, you know that.
I know. She wanted me to tell you.
Cole, please.
She wanted me to tell you she saw you dance.
Her eyes widen.
She said, when you were little, you and her had a fight. Right before your dance recital. You thought she didn't come to see you dance. She did.
Pressing her fingers to her lips, Cole's mom blinks back tears.
She hid in the back so you wouldn't see. She said you were like an angel. She said you came to the place where they buried her. Asked her a question. She said, the answer is every day. What did you ask?
Do I make her proud?
Cole reaches out to her. Burying her face in his shoulder, she holds him, stroking his tousled brown hair. Nighttime. Malcolm enters his townhouse and stops in the front hall. Turning toward the living room, he sees Anna asleep in front of the television, a red afghan pulled tightly around her shoulders. Their wedding video plays on the TV screen.
Hi, everybody. As most of you know, I'm not used to doing this. And I promised Anna that I'd try not to embarrass her.
Watching her intently, his lips drawn in a mournful frown, Malcolm slowly takes a seat on the couch behind her.
For sharing this wonderful day with us. It's bittersweet almost for me because I hate giving her up. And Malcolm's getting a
response. Anna.
She lies motionless. Malcolm swallows hard and glances down.
I miss you.
He gazes at her sleeping form.
I miss you too.
Why, Malcolm?
What? What is it? What?
Why did you leave me?
I didn't leave you.
Anna shifts in her chair. A gold wedding band drops from her hand and rolls to a stop at Malcolm's feet. Gaping, he glances at Anna's left hand and the two gold rings on her finger, then looks down at his own naked hand.
I see people. They don't know they're dead.
Malcolm staggers to his feet.
How often do you see them?
All the time.
In a flashback, Malcolm sits opposite Cole's mom.
They're everywhere.
At home, Malcolm backs into the front hall and lumbers into the kitchen. A red napkin lies beside a single playset.
They only see what they want to see.
Malcolm flashes back to the restaurant where Anna slides the check toward her.
Okay, Mikey.
Malcolm stares at himself in the wedding video, then turns his confused gaze to the cellar's red doorknob. In a flashback, Malcolm tries the knob. Gaping at it now, he sees a table stacked with books blocking the cellar door. He staggers onto the front stairs. In the living room, Anna exhales a frosty breath, her entire body shivering. A flashback. In the bedroom, Anna rushes to Malcolm, who lies on the bed, clutching his side. On the stairs, Malcolm sags against the wall.
Let me see.
In the bedroom, Anna pries his fingers away, revealing a neat hole in his blue dress shirt. On the stairs, Malcolm lays a hand on his side. A dark pool of blood spreads across the bed. Anna rolls Malcolm over and blood drips from his back. On the stairs, Malcolm fingers the wet stain on his shirt.
I think I'm okay, really. I think it just went...
With his head on a pillow, Malcolm gazes off, his wedding band glinting on his finger.
It doesn't even hurt anymore.
Behind him, a white curtain billows by the broken window. Malcolm's eye is set in a lifeless stare. Downstairs, Anna lies sleeping in a plush chair, Her porcelain cheeks are tinted a rosy pink, and breath steams from between her full lips. Malcolm sits beside her, his heavy-lidded gaze settling on her body.
I think I can go now. Just needed to do a couple things. Needed to help someone. I think I did.
A wistful smile flickers across his lips. He looks at Anna.
I needed to tell you something. You were never second. Ever. I love you.
Anna's eyelids squeeze shut, and a smile plays at the corners of her lips.
You sleep now. Everything will be different in the morning.
Good night, Malcolm.
Anna's sleeping face softens.
Good night, sweetheart.
With a tender smile, Malcolm closes his eyes. The screen fades to white, then dissolves to hazy footage of Malcolm and Anna's wedding day. Dancing, they share a gentle kiss. Fade to black.
Yo no quiero morir.